What would it take to change the mind of a man who helped overthrow a government in the name of Islam? And how can Christ transform the heart of that same person? And what does it mean for missionaries today? We'll get into all of that and more on today's episode of The Missions Show. Greetings and welcome to The Missions Show, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think. Thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined by my good friend through the power of the World Wide Web, talking about none other than the Pastor Scott W. Dunford of Western Hills Church in San Mateo. And you and me, Scott, we are here for another lazy stroll through the forest glens of missiological enterprise. And we're going to do that here together with a guest that I'm excited to welcome here in the studio. And those of you who follow the show know that it's not always that we have somebody in studio and we can actually make this work face to face. And actually learned, Daniel, that you're based here in York, Pennsylvania, my hometown, which is fun. And there aren't many people doing ministry here. So glad that you're here, at least when you're in the U.S. But, you know, with everything happening, certainly in the news with the conflict between Iran and the U.S. and Israel's involvement, it's an easy moment, I think. I think it's tempting for Christians, good Bible-believing Christians, to let their hearts grow cold toward Muslims, to forget that Christ is still saving his people out of all of these other faith traditions. And so that's why I'm really excited to hear your story today. Could you just briefly introduce yourself? Obviously, we've got a stack of your books here, many different titles on the relationship between Christianity and Islam, but share with us just a little bit about your background and your story, Daniel.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I was born in a Muslim family. My father had two wives and 12 children. We were all living in a house. From childhood, I was nominated for religious work because I was doing good in school, and they thought I could become a good religious leader too in the future. They didn't know I was going to be a good religious leader like this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have spent any money in my life. But I became very famous from the age of 9. People called me to recite the Quran for them and to do some Islamic rituals. And because I was very much involved in, you know, those activities, we learned from childhood that Christians and Jews were the most evil people in the world, you know. Christianity is a corrupt religion, and even, you know, many Muslim communities use the word Christian and Jew as swear words, like two Muslims fight with each other. They call each other, you Christian, you dog Christian, or son of Christian, or Jew, something like that. So with that mindset, I grew up. We didn't know about Christ anything according to the gospel, because gospel is illegal. But the Quran speaks a lot about Jesus and all other prophets, because the prophet of Islam went to a church nearly 30 years and he learned a lot of things from there. His first wife was a Christian and elder in the church. After I entered university, I became a radical Muslim, the follower of Ayatollah Khomeini, and I had done something that made me very famous. And then after the revolution, I was with two others, were the first ones invited to start the Revolutionary Army. Now is the cell, is the center of terrorism, supplier of terrorism. I was going to be the chief commanders of all of the who were killed in the last few months. But just God with...
We're talking about the same Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you were going to be the leader fighting of the IRGC.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to be their chief commander, all of them. I didn't know Jesus had a plan for me. And what happened very, very soon, like many others, many, like millions of others, we realized that Ayatollah deceived us. He spoke about democracy, but he just wanted to penetrate, you know. Unfortunately, some Western leaders were behind him to support him as a shield against Russian communism. They thought Shah possibly was not stronger. They didn't know that, you know, radical Islam is more dangerous than even communism. Anyhow.
And just briefly, there's U.S. involvement both in the Shah before
Jimmy Carter,
Khomeini, and then in the Ayatollah's government as well.
Exactly.
Meddling.
Yeah. Jimmy Carter. Iranians hate Jimmy Carter, unfortunately. Jimmy Carter was not alone. I mean, I'm June Callaghan now, England, and, President Jacques Chirac of France, they all came together. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that. We thought that was possibly Allah's miracle, raising such a voice in the world. So my motivation with his was different. Mine was very social and political. His was very religious. He hated the king of Iran, Ayatollah, because king of Iran accepted Israel as a country. Mm-hmm. But mine was a really social problem. I was a very bright student in the university, but unable to continue because of, you know, lack of money, unable to afford myself. My landlord kicked me out and pushed me to sleep under a bridge. A brilliant student. All my marks, almost all of them are A+. You know, they are the high distinction. And so that made me angry. So, and then, you know, the propaganda was all angry opposition need to come together. Mm-hmm. And eventually, gradually, I fell in love with Ayatollah, you know, became mm-hmm. one of his, you know, supporters. And so after the revolution, I was, as I mentioned, the first one with two others started, you know, invited to do that. But very soon I became really disillusioned with his attitudes. And he had promised actually not to take any political position because Iranians knew that the clergy had messed the country's life, I mean, decades ago. He knew that he had to lie to Iranians. So he spoke about democracy, you know, you're going to benefit from, you know, oil money, a whole lot of other things. And after he came and everything changed. So I became an opposition, very disappointed. Left the actually capital city, went to my hometown. Hometown, Iranians are around about 400 people group. They are very patriotic toward their own group. So I was coming from a city.
400 people groups within Persian,
they are different, with different dialects.
Okay. So all of those are within the Persian.
Persian and Mede.
Ethnic identity, speaking.
As the Bible says, Persian and Mede. Normally the northern parts are Mede, Kurds, and where we have come from, it's the Mede area.
Okay.
The Persians are from the south, and then Darius became the son-in-law of Cyrus, and they all mixed together, you know? You know, I went to my hometown, and because I was one of them, I really tried to serve them as much as I could, and that made me famous, really. I became the chief executive officer of a constructing organization, took all the facilities of city to rural area. And now even my Muslim friends say to me, the work you did in 1.5 years, they haven't done in 47 years. Mm. So that made me famous. And I announced my candidacy for Islamic Parliament. But Ayatollah's group saw that I was very famous. And they came and begged me actually 3 times to become their candidate. And I rejected that because I didn't like it. So
What was your position? In the military or?
No, I was not in.
Military
service.
Yeah.
That I ran away from the military in the time of Shah.
Right.
Because Ayatollah said run away and weaken. So that made me famous.
I see.
And then that, I was invited there, you know. And actually, one of those three became the general commander, chief commander of the army, the normal army. And he slaughtered a lot of Kurdish people, you know, very vicious. I was going to be also like him if I continued. Mm. And I praised the Lord, the one whom I didn't know in that time, didn't allow me to go in. Yeah. And so I rejected their invitation. By that time, Ayatollah had become supreme leader. Mm. unquestionable leader. That's an Islamic leadership value. And so nobody could question him. I had already questioned him. So that brought a whole lot of things into my life. In the election I won, they didn't allow me to go to the parliament. In the election day, I was beaten, fell unconscious. Nobody was able to touch me. So they employed brainless young people, gave them overt money just to, you know, kill, to invade. So it was chaotic, really. But despite independence won with a big margin, 88%. Ayatollah lost with 2%. Imagine 2% is almost zero. In a year time, people told him, we don't want you. But it was too late.
Right.
When radical Muslims take over, it's not easy to bring them down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And so he even plotted to kill the president, who was independent. And the president ran away from the country. Government, right. I was with him.
Right.
Government was demolished. Some were able to run away. Some were killed. I was one of them, caught and put in a cell waiting on death row with four others.
Right.
All four were killed, but few of my friends who were in Ayatollah's group secretly, they were in high position. I can't tell you in what position they were here. They were there because of their security. So they played a legal game, released me temporarily, and I could run away from Iran to Turkey.
Here at ABWE, we believe that the Great Commission is given not to nonprofit agencies, not to governments, not just to individuals, but to the local church. The local church is God's plan A for world missions. But let me ask you a question. When was the last time your church had not just a missions-themed service, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, asking, Lord, who is it from among our midst that you would have us to send out? Well, that's why our team here has built a wonderful collection of resources called Send Sunday. You can have not just another Mission Sunday, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, waiting upon Him, and seeking His direction for who He might send out from your church. There's prayer guides, there's bulletin inserts, there's sermon study guides, and more, all at abwe.org/sendsunday. Join the hundreds of other churches asking the Lord, who would you send out from our midst? Join us for Send Sunday. Well, let me cut in briefly and just make sure we give you a full and proper introduction. I know Scott wants to ask a question as well, but four of your books here. So Understanding and Freedom, Detailed Comparison Between Islam and Christianity, Dr. Daniel Shiesta, I should say, you serve as the president of Exodus from Darkness Ministries based here in Central Pennsylvania. This is The House I Left Behind, A Journey from Islam to Christ. That's your testimony, which we must hear more about in a moment here.
Yeah.
Christ above all, that's conversational evangelism with people
that compares nine worlds' beliefs and ideologies with each other.
Very helpful. And of course, many of the people listening are missionary practitioners and having conversations like that. Islam and the Son of God.
That only compares Islam with Christianity in all level.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one is for those who evangelize more to Muslims. They prepare themselves, and also it's a book for Muslims to read and see the comparison in an evangelical way.
Yeah.
I have got the fifth one. Unfortunately, it ran out, so I didn't have any copy to bring for you.
Well, many different questions, right, Scott?
Yeah. So I'm very interested in this part of your story. So, you know, you rose up within the government, eventually you fell out of favor, ended up on death row, got released because of your friends and your connections. But at that time, still, from what I understand, you were still not a believer. In fact, you went from using Christianity as an insult, and even at one point saying you would rather die than become a Christian. And then suddenly the gospel broke through. So I think for us that are listening, we'd love to know how the gospel break through to someone like that. Because I think that there's that understanding as we look at Islam, we look at terrorism, we look at things going on around the world that, man, those people are beyond the gospel. And yet Christ reached you. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, I needed a visa in Turkey. The only visa I could get was a student visa. I knew the language Turkish. My mom is Turk, so I spoke to her Turkish from childhood. It's a little bit different. You just prepare yourself in a month or two. So I enrolled in a doctorate program in Turkey with my supervising professor. I chose a sub major for my doctorate, how religions, cultures, and the philosophical ideologies like socialism and other isms affect people's, you know, personal life, their family life, organizational culture, leadership, ethics, and whole lot of other thing, you know. I really went to university for my visa, but I didn't know that Jesus was orchestrating it to open my eyes. I, you know, as Muslim, we always learn that Islam is the best and perfect religion. All other religions are evil, especially Christianity is evil because all evil in Western country is just because of Christianity. And never taught honestly to find good things about Christianity. Yeah, we had heard a lot of, you know, invention in Western countries. I never knew that was because of Christian values. And so after my investigation, I was really amazed and shocked. Shocked to find my so-called perfect Islam was the least of all other religions. Shocked to the extent to see paganism is better than Islam. And then amazed to see Christianity was superior in everything, amazing in everything. They do not say, actually, you know, Christian culture. In the university, they say Western culture. But, I mean, by studying some anthropology and other things, I realized that this is, you know, the religion is affecting people. Like, individual freedom was amazing. I discovered that you can only have freedom in Christianity. No other religion, no other ideology. You know, I mean, everybody knows that despotic religions like Islam or ideology like socialism, dictatorship doesn't walk hand in hand with freedom. Everybody knows that, you know. And for passive religions as well, you know, like New Age or Hinduism, passivity is also unable to walk hand in hand with freedom because passivity is the focus on self. I am God. You are God. We don't need each other. When we don't need each other, freedom doesn't make sense. So it was amazing, really, to me, to come to the family culture, truly amazed. You cannot see such a value in any other religion and ideology. A lady, a man come together, they become one, they are no longer two. Why? Because the source of absolute and unconditional love and joy is in between them, and he's connecting them together. And that harmony is amazing in business world, in every part, you know, of your life. And then coming to organizational culture, I think that was really yummy and delicious for me to see that amazing harmony. You are the members of one body. When you're working in an organization, you're the member of that, one of the members of that body, and your, you know, boss or the capital owner believes that I need to do something that to take up, you know, care of this guy, to have house, car, insurance. And that's why communism was unable to work in Western countries. And so sadly now that they have penetrated our universities and they have changed a whole lot of things in the culture. And also the leadership really amazed me. The leadership of Christianity is the most creative leadership taught in the universities. I was myself a professor for 8 years in university, one of the universities in Sydney. They are taught in university. What is the best model of leadership? A leader who is humble, participative, and charismatic in terms of relationship. He can relate himself to other people and relate them to one another. He can get their opinion. He can encourage them to take part in decision making. And I discovered that Christian culture is the only explicit culture in the world. All other cultures from other religions and ideologies are implicit. In other words, the mixture of darkness and light. Philosophically, it doesn't make sense. You cannot mix light and darkness together, but that's what they are. Christianity is the only explicit. Why? Because you're called the light of the world. Light understand. So it really amazed me in every way. So that was the introduction in my life.
So did you meet Christians in Turkey? Were there Christians that you're interacting with? Are you able to read Christian scriptures in Turkey, or did that come later?
No, that come later. I never thought, honestly, to become a follower of Christ. It just changed my worldview toward Christianity to see that with these values, they were able to have constitutional governments, you know, cultural, industrial revolution, renaissance, all other things, but never thought really to become a Christian. It didn't come to my mind. But when Jesus Christ starts to work in your life, he never leaves in half. He, in an amazing way, opened the door for me to go to a church, in a costly way, actually. I lost my money to my business partner, $30,000. I joined his business. Business was under his name. Then he took all my money and he's run away to, went to Germany. So I couldn't chase him legally. I tried to find friendly ways. I didn't know any friend of his. And then one day I remembered that there was a Christian group coming to him sometimes. How about if I go to their church, maybe they give me some ideas. So for the first time, I'm going to a church. You see how he is working? It was amazing, really. So I went to the church. I'm in front of the church. I'm afraid to enter the church because a Muslim shouldn't go to a church. And especially a fugitive Muslim has run away from death sentence. He didn't want to get another one here. But the money was big, pushed me to go to church. Enter the church. I was amazed. I was shocked to see them. They were praising God with music. Music is evil in Islam. And also I was shocked to see some ladies were men standing in front of people they were singing to in front of men. You don't see a lady in a worship place in Islam. They are behind the curtain and wall. So it just amazed me. Anyhow, I shared my story with them after the worship. They offered their help to me. They said they could find him in Germany. They had many friends there. They would write to them and encourage them to search for him and find him. So after that, they would be able to connect us. They told me, keep in touch with us. If we get any news, we would be able to share that with you. I asked them, how can I keep in touch with you? They said, come to the church. And that was not a good news because I was afraid to go to church. I thought possibly they would come and see me, but they were working every day. Only Sunday they were free. And so after that, continually, I went to the church for my money, never still thinking about really to become a follower of Christ. But seeing their attitudes just amazed me. It was really exceptional. It was amazing how they respected one another, how they respected their wives. Mm. A committed Muslim never wants his wife to get out of the house. Quran chapter 33 says, ladies, stay at home quietly. You don't raise your voice. If you go out, you need to cover yourself. Nobody knows who you are. But they were respecting their wife free and in an amazing way. And one day I was speaking actually to the pastor. His wife also joined the conversation. And his wife is talking to me. This guy is staring at his face, nodding in favor, and he shows happy. I said, where is this respect coming from? Yeah. We call them infidel, ungodly people. Is this ungodliness? Mm. Do I need to become ungodly to become respectful toward my wife? So it was amazing. Mm. And that caused me to listen to their messages. Especially their message about God was amazing. They were saying that we are in relationship with God. That's impossible in any other religion. God's called impersonal in other religions. In other words, they do not have any personality to have personal relationship with you. But these people are saying that we are in relationship with God. That created amazing things in my mind and heart, thinking that if God is not personal, then he cannot have image. He cannot have brain, because you cannot say nothing can have brain. So it really amazed me. And also deep in my heart, like all other Muslims or Hindus, they always love to have relationship with ultimate reality, but their religion says, no, you cannot have it. That philosophy was amazing to me, created other amazing things. I said to myself, if God doesn't have image, he cannot say to me, I love you. An impersonal being, right, and no person, right, doesn't have voice to say to me, I love you. And no person, impersonal, God cannot be just, cannot be righteous, because they are all attributes, can be only attributed to the personal God.
Yeah.
Totally amazed, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, this is not philosophy. This is honey. This is sweet. This is delicious.
Yes, yes, it is.
So
it is
that sweet. Really drew my attention. And after that, I became interested, after a dream, I became interested in reading their book, took a, you know, grab a gospel and started to read it. Gospel is an amazing book, honestly, philosophically, doctrinally, and socially and ethically. Yeah. In comparison with all other religious books, it's amazing.
Yeah.
We recently upgraded the studio table here at ABWE, and we needed something that didn't just look great on camera, but something that could handle mics, cables, and plenty of coffee mugs. Well, that's where our friends at Oak Park Table Company came in. They're a small, faith-driven business based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, not too far from here. And they didn't just sell us a table. They handcrafted one to fit our exact space and needs. And the wood grain, the finish, everything here is absolutely gorgeous, and it's built like a tank. That's what I care most about. What really stood out to us, though, was their integrity. For Oak Park Table Company, furniture is about creating spaces for hospitality and for connection. They don't make mass-produced junk. They produce legacy heirloom quality pieces that are meant to last. If you're ready to invest in custom furniture built with excellence and with your values in mind, check them out at oakparktables.com. Christ is utterly unique, and we want to explore with you more about how more Muslims can hear this message, maybe what the typical Western Christian might get wrong when trying to share the gospel with Muslims, and hear about what you've been up to in the years since your conversion out of Islam. We don't have enough time to do that on the main episode. We're going to do that in our second segment for our bonus subscribers. So if you're not a premium subscriber, go to missionsshow.com/premium and get access today, or go in your Apple Podcast app and get access to premium today. And we will continue the conversation with our new friend, Daniel Shiesta. Sorry, easy for me to say. Dr. Daniel Shiesta, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yeah,
that's very good. And of course, if people want to hear more information, where can they go on the web to learn more about Exodus from Darkness?
Exodus from Darkness. I've got lots of things there. They can go there. Yeah. They can communicate with us.
And they can get the fifth book and take a look at all of the other titles that have been published as well. Yeah. And we'll continue the conversation in a moment for our subscribers. For the rest of you, be encouraged. Christ is still saving his people. Go and make disciples of all the nations. If you're interested in learning what it looks like to take your next steps onto the mission field, even if you're afraid, our team would love to talk with you. Go to abwe.org/sendme and connect with our mobilization team today.